Okay, ladies, the topic I'd like to discuss with you tonight is the question of whether you're allowed to invite a non-religious Jew to join you for a Shabbos meal. Rav Soloveitchik is quoted by Rav Schechter in the Sefer Divrei Harav as saying that this is the hardest question to deal with, the hardest one. Now, you're going to say, come on, Rabbi, what's so hard? Like, why is it so difficult? So the answer is it's hard because it involves a conflict in values, no? On the one hand, we all believe in Kirov, no? Kirov like is amazing. Kirov is a great thing. It happens, by the way, Kirov, if we're not speaking on the record, we could say honestly that Kirov is a very labor-intensive line of work that's also not completely effective. When you think about it, I think there's a fellow, Adam Furziger, who did a study of Kirov organizations in the United States. And Kirov organizations in the United States tend to employ a single Kirov professional for every Baal Tshuva that you get per year. That's not a very good ratio. A one-to-one ratio is great in a classroom, no? You probably learn a lot with a one-to-one ratio. But if you're employing one Kirov pro for every Baal Tshuva that you make, that is not wonderful. But Kirov is still something that we value. Kirov is a great thing. Kirov is amazing. So on the one hand, we want to invite people over for a Shabbos meal because, let's be honest, what makes someone love Yiddishkeit more than chalant? Nothing. Right? What could be sushi? I don't know. But what could be better than a Shabbos meal with a family sitting around singing some meals? There is something very beautiful about our Shabbosos. And one could say that it should be Heter Gomor, of course. What's the problem? Kirov. Kirov is like the most important value in Yiddishkeit. On the other hand, we could say, hold it, let's go slowly. Kirov. Is that so important? Am I allowed to do Averis in order to do Kirov? Right, we used to joke around. I hope I'm not insulting anyone who's involved in NCSY. We used to joke around that NCSY was Rashi Tevos for what? Negiah can save Yiddishkeit. No? Anyone remember this? Back to the old high school days. Now, that is not halachic, right? That's not halachic. You can't, as much as you want to save Yiddishkeit, but certain things just like, it don't go. So, maybe you can't invite a non-religious Jew to join you for Shabbos. Because you know that if you invite the non-religious Jew to join you for Shabbos, the non-religious Jew will drive, or will take the subway, or will violate Shabbos some other way, and l'cha'ora, it would seem that there's no heter for me to violate an avera just to be mekarev someone else. So this is the dilemma, this is the conflict that gets involved in inviting non-religious Jews for Shabbos meals. So far, so good? So what are the approaches that you've heard? Anything that you'll say will be right. Yeah? So as long as you offer them to stay over the night, that's a common thing. And what's the halachic basis for that?
I'm giving an opportunity not to do the
Aveira. And therefore, right, the people in my shir will be able to elaborate a little bit more. Therefore, you're not enabling the Aveira. You're not causing them to do the Aveira. They might not do it. And that lowers the level of Isser. That is certainly one approach. Some poskim certainly take that approach. Others take different approaches, no? Some say that you can never invite a non-religious Jew to join you on Shabbos. Not only can you never invite a non-religious Jew to join you on Shabbos, we'll see this from Rav Moshe Feinstein and his Tshuvas that we have over here. Rav Moshe says that you're not allowed to have any program on Shabbos ever if non-religious Jews will come and they'll have to drive. There was a great Goyin, Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. He died very young, no? He was Nifter, he was like in his 40s when he was Nifter. And like all of the really good English books were written by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. His stuff, I mean, you have to like read it slowly. If you read it quickly, you miss the fact that he's actually saying something. So, here, turn to page 2. Shut Igris Moshe, Orech Chaim Chelek Aleph Siman Tzadiches. Right, Reb Moshe has the following question: Balabatim Shirotzim Lasos Minyan Avor Chinuch Hayiladim Ubarur Sheyavu B'Machines. What are machines? So the translation says Mechonios. Right, machines is Reb Moshe Hebrew. Reb Moshe Hebrew is like this interesting language. He spells ice cream Aleph Yud Yud Samach Kuf Reish Yud Mem. Right. I can't imagine any Israeli being able to understand like what Igros Moshe is all about. But the shaila is that you want to make a minyan to educate kids, but the kids are going to come with cards on Shabbos, and it's written to Malas Kvod Yedidi Reb Arye Moshe Elya Kaplan, who is the famous Reb Arye Kaplan, who wrote all those books for NCSY because he was unbelievable in Kiruv, no? And Reb Arye Kaplan wanted to have a minyan on Shabbos for the kids. Says Reb Moshe, you know what? You can't do that. Because you're going to be causing them to violate Shabbos. And it is really usur to cause people to violate Shabbos. And if the Balabatim won't listen to you, I'm just paraphrasing what he says. First Reb Moshe says, who says chinuch for tefillah is more important than chinuch for Shabbos? Tell the kids, don't come! Because that's chinuch. But so they're going to learn how to answer Amen and Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo, and that you move up and down by Kedusha and all the other things that you learn in a minyan. Shabbos is more important, says Reb Moshe. Shabbos is more important. So Reb Moshe writes, Chas v'shalom, to be maskim, to establish such a minyan. And if they're not going to listen to you, so you know what you should do? Whisper to all the kids, don't come. Basically, put yourself out of business. Right? Now, I'm not exactly sure what happened, what the reality was, because Arye Kaplan was extremely successful in Kiruv. I can't imagine being successful in Kiruv listening to this psak of Reb Moshe. But that's what Reb Moshe writes. Reb Moshe says that you really should not have this minyan at all. It's a terrible thing. And he develops this idea even further in the next tshuva, in Siman Tzadi Tes, where Reb Moshe is writing to a rabbi, Naftali Karlbach, in Detroit, about the same type of issue, whether you're allowed to invite people to daven in shul and you'll give them a gift for coming to shul if you know that they're coming in machines. Again, and machines is cars, for those of you who don't speak 1950s Yiddish/English, right? Machines means cars. So says Reb Moshe, oh, obviously this is Chilul Shabbos, and it's even worse than Lifnei Iver, because this is Mesis. You see that line in Igros Moshe? The third line in the second Tshuva. Hu od garua me'isser Lifnei Iver, sharei hu od be'isser Mesis. Now, let's just translate terms. Lifnei Iver means that I cause you to do an Aveira. Let's say you're a Nazir, and you are on one side of the river, and I'm on the other side of the river. And for some reason, on your side of the river, there's no wine. On my side of the river, there is wine. And I give you the wine. That's the Issa Dairais of Lifnei Iver. I cause you to do an Aveira. Mesis, says Reb Moshe, is worse than Lifnei Iver. Now, Mesis usually means I incite you to do what? Classic Mesis is Avodah Zarah. Right? That's really bad, by the way. Don't try that. Right? Sometimes people like, don't try for dessert, whatever you say. Really bad, right? Nothing to talk about. Says Reb Moshe, this might be worse than Lifnei Iver, this might be Mesis. And Reb Moshe's argument is as follows, if I understand it correctly. The classic case of Lifnei Iver, I give the Nazir wine to drink. Who wants the wine? The Nazir or me? Not such a trick question. The Nazir, right? I give you the wine to drink because you want the wine. Beautiful. In this case, I'm inviting you to daven in a minyan. You're going to drive. Why are you driving? Are you driving for you or you're driving for me? For the inviter or the invitee? For the inviter. You're only coming to the minyan because I invited you. In the case of Lifnei Iver, you want the wine. Right? You want the Iver Menachai. But over here, I want you to have it. I want you to come to the minyan. Says Rav Moshe, this might be considered mesis. And even though Zok Rav Moshe, the Isser of mesis, involves Avodah Zarah, that's only to be Chayiv Skila. But any time I cause you to do any Avera, and you're doing the Avera for me, says Rav Moshe, that is worse than Lifnei Iver, that is mesis. So Rav Moshe Feinstein holds, I am not allowed to invite anyone over to my house for a Shabbos meal, a non-religious Jew, because it is mesis, which is worse than Lifnei Iver, and therefore Rav Moshe basically wants to put the Kiruv world out of business. Hello.
Can we say that Rav Moshe is referring to a case of the daytime meal rather than the nighttime meal or minyan? Meaning, why can we?
I don't know if it matters, so long as you know that the people are going to come by car.
Not if they be coming Erev Shabbos.
So, maybe then in that case it wouldn't apply, perhaps. Rav Moshe doesn't really get into those details. But it would seem that the way Rav Moshe presents it, as long as you know that they're doing an Avera, and they're doing the Avera for you, that would be the Isser.
It's an important aspect, because if they're only going to be driving back to their homes, because they came Erev Shabbos, then they're not, when they're going driving back to their homes, it's no longer for you. Right? They could have stayed
Well,
home.
No, because had I not invited them, they would stay home and they'd be watching TV. And watching TV, let's be honest, right? Watching TV is much less of an Avera on Shabbos than driving a car. If you look, there's a book called The Halachos of Pregnancy and Childbirth. It's written by Rabbi Yisroel Dov Webster. He's like a die-in by Reb Tovia Goldstein's Beis Din in Brooklyn. This is like the classic English book that everyone uses now when they are in preparing for labor and childbirth. Okay, that's why you get the book. So there's a few like really interesting things in the books. They have like a 200-page section on skoulos, which is kind of weird and heebie-jeebie, not my style. But in that book also, he points out the amount of isurim d'oraisa that you violate when you drive a car. You see, if I turn on the TV on Shabbos, in all likelihood, I'm only violating an isur d'rabbanon. Because electricity, according to the vast majority of poskim against the Chazon Ish, is only an Issur D'Rabbanan. But if you drive, that is an Issur D'Oraisa of Havara. Every time you push the gas pedal, no? You are causing more gas to go into the... Now, it could be that in our cars today with fuel injection, it's not an exact one-to-one parallel. Because it... Right, the fuel comes out even if you're not pushing the pedal directly, but still, driving a car involves real Isurei D'Oraisa. It's really bad. So now, if I would not invite these people to come to my Shabbos meal, they wouldn't drive on a Friday night. Come on, Friday night, you stay home. You try to be asleep by 9 p.m. if possible. Yeah.
Like, you live far
ish-aways,
and maybe you live in a city, so they have an option of walking,
even though
a little bit far, but most likely they'll drive, but they could also hypothetically bike or take a subway just as possible.
Right, so again, so in cases like that, you have to figure out the likelihood, what's most likely or not. It could be that it's much better than a case when you live in suburbia. I live in the city, so if I'd invite someone, in all likelihood, they would what? They'd take the subway to get to me. And in all likelihood, that is an Issur D'Rabbanan. Right? The only possible Issur D'Oraisa would be carrying, because you carry the MetroCard, or you carry whatever else you're carrying. But if you hold that there is an Eiruv around Stern College, that means that you're assuming that 34th Street is now Rosh Hashanah D'Oraisa. That means that there's probably no Rosh Hashanah D'Oraisa in Manhattan besides the George Washington Bridge or the tunnels. Right? And you're probably not walking over the bridge or the tunnels on Shabbos. Right? So, yes, it depends on the situation in the community, but assuming you know that they'll drive, we're setting the case up that way. It would be much better in a case when they may not drive. But We're making a few assumptions to have this conversation. So Moshe says it's a real problem. It's in Isur D'Oraisa, not even of Lifnei Iver, but Mesis, which is much worse than Lifnei Iver, even though classic Mesis is for Avodah Zarah, but there's something along the lines of Mesis whenever you're doing an Avera for me. That's what Rav Moshe assumes. So far, so good? So now, there's a few ways that we could approach this question. One way of approaching this question would be through the rules of Lifnei Iver. And then there's another way to approach this question that we can say, based on a Tshuvas HaRashba that is quoted in Or HaChaim Siman Shin Vav Sif Yud Daled, which I didn't put on the sources, but if you're interested in a nice write-up on this in English, there's these two volumes now called Headlines. You know the Headlines radio program? It's on like every Motzei Shabbos. I was on it one time speaking about sherry casks. He's a tough cookie, this David Lichtenstein. He knows how to like ask good questions. He really prepares. So he had one of his headlines was about this question of inviting people on Shabbos. And he always takes a different tact than most. And the tact that he was trying to argue is that maybe we could say that just like Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Kol HaTorah Kula, so spiritual Pikuach Nefesh is also Doche, no? This is like Heter Kirov on steroids. This is unbelievable. Spiritual Pikuach Nefesh. Think about it. What am I doing? Right? I'm inviting you so that you experience the Kishka of Shabbos. You have the holiness of a Shabbos, and that's going to be the Kirov opportunity. And it's Kirov, and Pekuach Nefesh is Docha Shabbos. And we know that when the Chazal say that Gadol HaMachtio Yoser Mihahargo, that on a certain level, causing someone to do an Aveira is worse than causing someone to die, is worse than killing a person. So therefore, maybe causing them to do mitzvahs, if I'm allowed to do anything to keep you alive, alachas kama v'kama, I can do anything for kiruv. Wow. Right, this is a power. And if you do NCSY, this would be an awesome speech to give an NCSY Shabbaton. They'd be like, wow, that's like pretty impressive. And there's a Rashba. It's called Shulchan Aruch Siman Shin Vav Sif Yud Daled, like we mentioned. The Rashba talks about somebody whose daughter is being taken away, Latar Basra. Let's say there are people who are taking your kid away, and your kid is not going to be religious. You know, they had like these Cantonist decrees in pre-Soviet Russia and Tsarist Russia. They had these decrees that they would put you in the army for some 21 years, and basically your Yiddishkeit is shat. It's gone. So the kid is on the way out. They're coming to take it. Are you allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to get your kid back? Is spiritual Pikuach Nefesh also Pikuach Nefesh? So the Rashba and the Tshuva discusses this, and the Rashba remains uncertain. The Balei HaTosfos at the beginning of Shabbos, the Beis Yosef points out at the end of Shin Vav, the Balei HaTosfos are inclined that I'm allowed to do an Aveira to save you from doing a bigger Aveira, providing there are certain cases. Let's talk about that Gemara in Shabbos Daf Dalet, no? Let's say the Malacha of Mevashel or Ofer on Shabbos. So the Gemara says that you only violate the Malacha of Mevashel or Ofer on Shabbos when the food gets cooked to a certain extent. Right? When it's krimas pnei hapas betanur. When the top of the bread begins to darken. So let's say the following thing happened. Let's say you put bread in the oven on Shabbos, and I come by. Am I allowed to pull your bread out of the oven so that you don't violate the real Isser of Bishul b'Shabbos? The Gemara tells us in a few places that there's an Isser d'Rabbanan involved in being rode at pas, in taking bread out of the oven on Shabbos. But am I allowed to do an Isser d'Rabbanan to prevent you from your Issa D'Oraisa not just the nisa d'oraisa, but nisa d'oraisa of baking, cooking on Shabbos, which is a chi of skila, which, by the way, ladies, is bad. Don't do it, right? Do not cook on Shabbos. Don't think that these shilas never happen, no? Someone came to my apartment a few months ago on a Shabbos morning to say that they were having guests, like, for Shabbos lunch, wonderful, beautiful, and they realized that they didn't have enough chalent. So Friday night, they took barley and they added it to the chalent pot. It's really bad. Don't do that. Hey, so then the shayla was, are they allowed to eat the chalent? Right? Not a simple question at all. Not so pashat. People do violate cooking on Shabbos. Whenever you turn up your radiator on Shabbos in the Heights, or any community, but most communities don't have like radiators like we have in the Heights, which go back to the 1930s. Right? When you turn the radiator up, you're cooking the water that accumulates in the radiator. People do cook on Shabbos sometimes. It's really bad. Don't do it. So let's say somebody put bread in the oven. And I come by. And I see your bread in the oven. Am I allowed to take the bread out of the oven? Am I allowed to violate an issur d'rabbanan of removing the bread in order that you should not violate the issur d'oraisa of baking or cooking on Shabbos? So the Baal HaTosfos deals like a stira between a Gemara and Erev and a Gemara and Shabbos. And the Baal HaTosfos basically conclude that it depends. If you were negligent, if you put the bread in the oven yourself on Shabbos, so we say, eh! Halitehu l'rasha v'yamos. Let him die. Let her die. Right? Give the... Right? That doesn't sound nice, no? Not sugar-coated. Halitehu l'rasha v'yamos. It's a pasuk. And any pasuk that sounds like really nice or really mean is obviously a mishle, no? Whatever. But halitehu l'rasha v'yamos. That's what the Baal HaTosfos say, if you did it yourself. If you didn't do it yourself, so then... You didn't do it to yourself, so then we'll allow you... Allow the other person to take the bread out of the oven on Shabbos. The Baal HaTosfos then deal with the question, what do you mean? I can't do an Aveira for you? But the Gemara in Gittin talks about someone who has a Chetzi Eved, Chetzi Bas Chorin. Right? If I have a half slave, half free person, or Chetzi Shifcha, Chetzi Bas Chorin, so this person can't marry anybody. Because you can't marry a regular Jew, because you're a shifcha. You can't marry an eved, because you're a baschorin. You're both. You're a split personality. Chetzi eved, chetzi baschorin. So Gemara says, kofen es rabo l'shacharo, that you force the adon to free. The Gemara asks, how are you allowed to do that? Right? There's an isser of freeing an eved. The Torah says, l'olam bahem tavodu. No? We usually don't think that, like, purchasing avodim is so halacha l'maisa. My father at home has an old siddur. I don't know if you ever saw this, Shas Ksaba. That was an old siddur at home that was printed in the United States in like the 1840s that has a bracha for knias avodim. There's a bracha you make when you buy avodim. I don't recommend it, by the way. Okay? We have to come out on the side of moral clarity. We believe slavery is actually bad, but there's a Torah institution called slavery. So Gemara says that you force the Adon to free the Chetz Yeshivcha Chetz Yabaschorin in order that this person should be able to get married. So Tosfos asks, one second, but I'm not supposed to do an Aveira so that you can do something good. So Tosfos says, oh yeah, well, we don't do an Aveira so that you could do one good thing. But Pru Revu, that's a mitzvah gedola. Sheves, right, to populate the world is a tremendous mitzvah. By the way, you get an impression from that Tosfos. It's the same Tosfos in Gittin Daf Ches, Daf Samach Aleph. No? You get an impression on that Tosfos that even though women are not mitzuva on the mitzvah Pru Revu technically, but they are mitzuva on Sheves. Right? There's a second mitzvah to populate the world. And the Baal HaTosfos say that Sheves is a mitzvah rabbah. It's a great mitzvah. And you're allowed to do an Aveira in order that someone else should do a great mitzvah. So now let's think about it. Let's think about it. We have our question, am I allowed to do an Aveira, to be Mechal on Shabbos, in order that this person does not go off the Derech? Kiruv. So there is a tshuva of the Nachlas Shiva. It's the last tshuva of the Nachlas Shiva, Simen Pei Gimel. The Nachlas Shiva basically says that the Tosfos argues on the Rashba, but both opinions on Tosfos would say you're allowed to be Mechalo Shabbos for purposes of Kiruv. Unbelievable. Because think about it. If I could do an Aveira in order to enable this woman to fulfill the mitzvah of Sheves, because that's a great mitzvah, so al achas kama v'kama tova mechupeles, I could do an Aveira in order to allow someone to remain Jewish, to get Kiruv points. And according to the opinion in Tosfos, that we don't do an Aveira when you put yourself in the situation, but if you didn't put yourself in the situation, if you're not religious because you were raised not religious, you're not religious because, who knows? So one could argue that it's mutter to be Mechal Shabbos for a Heter Kiruv. And if you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for a Heter Kiruv, certainly you can invite someone on Shabbos for Kiruv purposes. This is what Rabbi David Lichtenstein suggests in Headlines, Volume 1. Okay, in the back, please identify yourself, because you have a question. This is your second question, so I'll ask your name.
Sarah?
Hi.
If on the premise of being able to do an Avera for Kiruv, isn't that at fault for not being religious? Two questions on that. How far does that extend?
Good.
Decide that they're going to do anything to promote Jewish interests on Shabbos, even if it's not called Shabbos?
Right, I mean, this would be awesome, though. We could go to Great Adventures on Shabbos as part of... It doesn't sound reasonable, right? Okay, good.
And then my second question is, I don't know how to answer, but I've heard people talk about how in today's day and age, just being sort of disconnected in general, that all people are considered to not be at fault for religious observance or lack of religious...
Right, so generally speaking, that's a different truth than the Binyan-Siyan. The Binyan-Siyan assumes that we treat all Mechalei Shabbos Bizmanazel like a Tinuk Shenishba. That's the famous Chazanish in Yerideh Simin Beis, that today, irreligious people, Aleinu L'moshkan B'Avosus Ahava, we have a responsibility to try to draw them in. We don't apply the general halachas that we apply to irreligious people. So that certainly is true. The question, though, is, one could argue that, listen, so you're not going to be responsible for the Averis that you do, but still, you're not going to be getting mitzvos. So shouldn't I be allowed to be Mechal Shabbos in order to actually bring you in order that you should get mitzvos? It is something that's worth thinking about. If this discussion is correct, that we assume that spiritual pikuach nefesh is actual pikuach nefesh, so your first question is the real killer of a question. Like, what's the scope of that? So it's inconceivable, I think. By the way, that's my favorite word for my favorite movie. But it's inconceivable that I could be Mechal Shabbos and say, oh, it's Kiruv. It's Kiruv. I'm going to drive and like bring it. First of all, what type of Kiruv is it? Right? I'm driving along in my car on Shabbos and I'm screaming out, Shabbos, come on. Right? It's, first of all, bad Kiruv. Second of all, L'cha'ora, pikuach nefesh only works in the case that you're pretty likely to be successful, no? We began tonight by speaking about the high rate of ineffectiveness of the Kiruv movement. This, by the way, began with the first Kiruv professional in the Torah. The first Kiruv professional was named Noach. Noach is a colossal failure. Right? The man is spending how many years building this teva? 120 years. And how many people actually became Bali Tshuva from Noach? None. Right? Do you know of anyone? I don't know if a single person ever told me that Noach was Makarifem. So, Kiruv has a long history of not being effective. Presumably, the Heter Pekuach Nefesh is only in the case, right? I can't be Mechal Shabbos if someone is out there bleeding and I have no idea what to do to save the person, right? So, Mistama, there's no real Heter for me to be Mechal Shabbos, correct? Any of you going to be doctors? If you're going to be a doctor and you know what you're doing, there's a chance. But A regular person, if you have no idea what you're doing, just to be Mechallel Shabbos, presumably that won't help. So this approach, I think, of Pekuach Nefesh, in the spiritual sense, is somewhat difficult. So let's go back to our problem. Rav Moshe Aser's inviting people for Shabbos meals. Inviting non-religious people. I have done this, no? I think if I'd ask you, probably many of you have invited non-religious people for a Shabbos meal. Is there a heter? So we had one heter at the beginning. You say you offer them a place to stay over. How does that help? Maybe. Maybe there's some suggestion, but we have to define it better. So I think there are a few possible ways of going about this. One way of going about this is like what you said, that you offer a place to stay, and it's a halachic matter. We mentioned that in that case, it's not really like you are causing the Avera. The Avera might not happen, and therefore perhaps it's going to be mutter, and those in my shir can plug this into the position of the Shach and the Dog Omer Vav and the Binyan Sion, and maybe it's mutter for those reasons, but that's something that you'll encounter on your test. Not for the others. However, I'm very tough. I give tests. However, I think there's another approach that Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach takes, and others follow this approach, and that is that when we talk about a shaila of Lifnei Iver, we have to look at it from a broader perspective. Lifnei Iver means I'm not allowed to cause you to do an Aveira. So if you're a Nazir, I can't give you wine. Because that's causing you to do an Aveira. Or it's assisting you in doing an Aveira. But let's say I don't have in mind that you should do an Aveira. Rather, I have in mind to bring you closer to Yiddishkeit. One could argue that from a Lifnei Iver perspective, I don't look at the specific action, but I look at the entire context. Let's give an example. It says in Shulchan Aruch that I'm not allowed to invite someone over to my house and give them food if they're not going to make a bracha, because that's Lifnei Iver. By the way, that din in Shulchan Aruch, in Arachayim Kuf Samach Gimel, sounds like it's Lifnei Iver, even though it's not a Chafza of Aveira. No? If I give you food and you don't make a bracha on it, it probably is not a Chafza of Aveira, unless you're very creative in Lundus, and you assume that food without a bracha, it becomes real gezel. Right? That's a machlokes probably between Rashi and the Maharsha, when Daf Lamed Hay in brachas, no? Oh. But be it as it may, I'm not allowed to invite you over and give you food without a bracha. So the Chazon Ish had the following question, no? There was a Jew named David Ben-Gurion. You heard of him? He's the first prime minister of Israel. Now, Ben-Gurion met with the Chazon Ish. There was actually one other person at that meeting. My father mentioned his name to me. I don't remember it right now. I'll have to ask him. But at the meeting when Ben-Gurion met with the Chazon Ish, that's when they established what they call the status quo, which is the fact that yeshiva bachrim are exempt from army service. Right? That basically is the trophy in the cap of Haredi Jewry, to be exempt from army service. And that was arranged when the Chazon Ish met with Ben-Gurion. And Ben-Gurion thought, come on, how many yeshiva bachrim are there in the whole country? This is 1949. There's like 3,000-4,000. It's like garnished. Right? That's like half a room in the mirror. It's nothing. So Ben-Gurion said, okay. So the shaila was like this. Ben-Gurion went to the Chazon Ish's house. The Chazon Ish didn't leave Bnei Brak, no? Chazon Ish sat in his house, and he was there. So Ben-Gurion comes to his house. Now usually when someone comes to his house, comes to your house, you give them food. The Chazon Ish is mesupik. What do I do? On the one hand, the Prime Minister of Israel is coming to my house, so I should give him food. On the other hand, David Ben-Gurion's not going to make a bracha, so I'm not allowed to give him food. No? It's a serious shaila that the Chazon Ish had. So, in the biography of the Chazon Ish, They say that the Chazon Ish put the food in front of Ben-Gurion, but far enough away that he couldn't reach it. And he assumed that the food's on the table, so he'll think I'm being mechaved him. On the other hand, he can't reach it, so he's not going to ask me to give it to him, says the Chazon Ish, and therefore he won't actually eat any, and therefore I'm not in violation of Lefnever. By the way, the Chazon Ish was a smart man to think of this. Rabbi Yosef Gavriel Bechafer, in the RJJ Journal, volume 66, Rabbi Bechafer points out in a footnote that that's the way the story is quoted in the biography of the Chazon Ish. However, in the David Ben-Gurion blog, where they tell you the stories of Ben-Gurion from Ben-Gurion's perspective, it says that nothing was on the table when Ben-Gurion lent him the Chazon Ish. But Bekitzer, right? I don't know how to reconcile the two. It's a steam. Okay? But Bekitzer, the issue that we have is, let's say you have a non-religious Jew coming to your house who's not going to make a bracha. Are you allowed to give the person food? On the one hand, it says in Shulchan Aruch not to. On the other hand, it says Reb Shlomo Zalman, and this is in Siman Lamed Hey, the bottom of page 2, right? Reb Shlomo Zalman argues, you could read it on your own, and I think you realize I'm not deceiving you. If my intention is that I want to bring you closer to Yiddishkeit, and potentially you could be a big supporter of my yeshiva, right? You're going to give money for the Stern Beit Midrash. And therefore, right, many institutions take money from non-religious Jews. Now, we couldn't survive without it. So, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, don't look at the local issue of giving food, bracha, no bracha. Look at the larger picture. Is this a michshol? Lifnei iver lo sitein michshol. Don't give a stumbling block. Oh, it's not a stumbling block. It's an opportunity to do more mitzvos. And therefore, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, he thinks it's going to be mutter to give the food, because if you don't give the food, the guy will be insulted, right? Here, look at, it's two lines from the bottom. Kimo Kane, im afilo b'tzura mechubedet, yivakesh memenu lito yadam uvarech. Let's say I ask the fellow, you know what, sir, please, madam, please make a bracha. I give you food. Please make a bracha. What's going to happen, says Reb Shlomo Zalman? That will seem like an insult. This is going to make the guy very angry. And Basically, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, if I don't give you food, you're going to violate bigger affairs. Right? You're going to hate Jews. If I give you food and I ask you to make brachas, you're going to hate from Jews. So therefore, you'll be violating bigger averis. So to prevent you from violating a bigger avera, I could give you something that's a smaller avera. Right? This is what we would call lifnei iver triage. Right? You know, like if you go into the emergency room. By the way, if you're ever like really sick and you have to go to the emergency room, try to avoid an emergency room in Manhattan. If you go to Holy Name Hospital in Teaneck, you have a much better chance of being seen within 2 weeks. Just klal gadol. Like, emergency rooms in the city, you can end up waiting there at Bias Gold Tzedek. Again, it should come quickly, Mashiach, but at the same time, you don't want to be in the emergency room the whole time. What Reb Shlomo Zalman is saying is that there's a concept of lifnei iver triage, meaning, I make a cheshbin. If I don't give you the food and drink, so then what's going to happen is, you might become more distant from Yiddishkeit. If I give you food and drink, I'm going to make you closer to Yiddishkeit. I'll give you opportunities to do so many mitzvahs, etc., etc., etc. So therefore, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, that's why he thinks it's mutter. It's not called a michshol. Now, this same idea, or a very related idea, a very similar idea, is found in the Tshuvas of Reb Moshe Sternbuch. And Moshe Sternbach is probably the furthest thing away from being modern Orthodox, no? He's the Ravid of the Eid HaRedis. That means he's number two. Number one in the Eid HaRedis now is Reb Tovia Weiss, no? Number two is Reb Moshe Sternbach. He used to be in Johannesburg. Now he's basically in Eretz Yisrael the whole time. He has a shul in Har Nof. It's called Reb Moshe Sternbach Shul. It's a very catchy name. That's Reb Moshe Sternbach. Now, Reb Moshe Sternbach is dealing with a shayla. The Tshuvas Ranogas call Aleph Simin Shin Nun Ches. Right, you have a child who's about tshuva, who's inviting his parents for a Shabbos meal, and he knows that the parents are going to drive back with the car after the meal. So the child is saying that this is the way he's being mekar of his parents. On the other hand, the parents are being mechal Shabbos anyway, but the kid thinks that slowly the parents will come closer to Yiddishkeit. So, comes along with Moshe Sternbach, and he writes, Nir'eh. Second paragraph. She is so the Israel Lifne Iver, who dumya di Iver Shemachshilo. Lifne Iver Losita Mikshal means a blind person. You shouldn't make the blind person stumble. So someone who will stumble similar to a blind person. Avalim Kavanos Raklotovas Atmo, Lo Nikra Machshil, Ella Kimoshirofe Minateach, Lo Nikra Make Chaveiro, Kachkan, Halo In Kavanos Loharalo, Uliyaiso Eitzosheno Hogenes, Ella Shemikava Bazella Hadrichum Lakarvon Madercha MS. Says Moshe Sternbach, he has the mashal, and the Rambam uses this mashal elsewhere, that a doctor chops off a limb of a patient sometimes in order to heal the patient. Sometimes, right, you would think chopping off a limb, that's an aveira. No, that is make chaveiro. But no, it's not make chaveiro, because I take a broader perspective. I say, I'm not injuring you. What I'm doing is, I'm causing you to have a refuah shleima. So also over here, it's not a michshol. I'm not causing you to do an aveira. What I'm doing is, I am giving you opportunities for more mitzvos. And therefore, by the way, according to Moshe Sternbach, and according to the Reb Shlomo Zalman, do you have to offer them a place to stay over even? Probably not.
I think it's still a push to say not. You think that they need to limit as much as you can.
So maybe you have to limit as much as you can, but on the other hand, right, maybe you have to be realistic. I would say, however, that for Moshe Sternbuch and for Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, the heter is only if it's really a kirov meal. Mashal ma'adavar domeh. Right? All of you at some point are probably going to have co-workers. Right, that means that you'll be working, and there are going to be other people working in the office with you. And co-workers, you know, see from women, and they start asking you questions. Now, if the person is genuinely interested in Yiddishkeit, so then inviting them over for a Shabbos meal, l'cha'ora, is mutter, is entirely mutter. It's heter gomer, according to Reb Shlomo Zalman and Moshe Sternbuch. Because it's not a michshol, that's real kiruv. But let's say there's someone in my office who's just a nice person. And we enjoy hanging out together. And we share interests in, I don't know, who knows what. I don't know if there's a heter in that case, according to Reb Shlomo Zalman, no? Reb Shlomo Zalman is saying that the heter is because it's not a michshol. In other words, I'm giving you an opportunity for a mitzvah. And presumably, it has to be somewhat realistic. If it is, and this is another English word that sounds Yiddish, if it's really far-fetched, so then I don't know if that will help, according to Shlomo Zalman. I don't know if I could define that this is not a michshol. What do you mean it's not a michshol? In all likelihood, is kirov going to happen? You have a co-worker who has zero interest in frumkeit, but you and the co-worker share interests in movies, and they'll come over to your house for a Friday night meal, and you'll talk about The Princess Bride, which, of course, is the most awesome movie ever. And that's what you'll be talking about the whole time. That's not kiruv. No? According to the approach that we didn't really go into tonight, but the approach that I've been discussing with my shir for the last while, the approach that, you know what, for someone who's going to violate an aveira anyway, and they could violate the aveira anyway, right? If someone is doing an avera b'mezid, and it's chad avra d'nahara, so then there is no iser of lifnei iver, that's going to be muti even if it's not for kiruv. But according to Reb Shlomo Zalman, and according to the Tshuvas v'Hanhagos, according to Reb Moshe Shternbuch, the only heter is if I can reasonably define what I'm doing as being a kiruv type of thing. It's interesting to note that in this article that Rabbi Bechafer wrote in the Journal of Halachic Contemporary Society, Volume 66, he says that he doesn't think there's any machlokas at all between Reb Moshe Feinstein and Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. You see, Reb Shlomo Zalman develops this idea, and then Reb Shlomo Zalman wrote to Or Sameach. Or Sameach is like a kiruv yeshiva. He wrote to Or Sameach that they're allowed to have services on Shabbos. They should keep the yeshiva parking lot locked on Shabbos. Right? It used to be a big thing that the definition of an Orthodox shul versus a conservative shul is in. To go to an Orthodox shul, you had to park down the block. In the conservative shul, the parking lot was open on Shabbos. No? I remember as a kid that there would be people, not as a kid, in my shul, there was an old man who passed away in my shul like 6 years ago, I think was his levaya. And after davening, every week, he'd wait for the bus. And then he'd take the bus back home. I remember as a kid, there used to be people, I grew up in Lawrence, there are people in front of Shari Tfila, two old people, a couple. They used to wait for the bus right in front of the shul every week, and they used to always fight, the husband and wife. Like, she'd be hitting him with her pocketbook. I don't know what was going on, but can I know, it was a school of Arichas Yom, they both lived long into their 90s. Who knows? But Reb Shlomo Zalman writes that they could have services on Shabbos, even though the people would drive. He feels it's a bit of a chilul Hashem to have the shul parking lot open on Shabbos, so therefore you should lock your parking lot, and they should park down the block and then walk to shul. That was pretty standard in Orthodox shuls. Reb Moshe's approach, I don't think, was standard. I think most Orthodox shuls would have some sort of kiruv type things, no? In my shul, Ad HaYom HaZeh, on Yom Kippur, you get a much bigger crowd, because we get all the people that Dr. Jeffrey Gorak calls the non-observant Orthodox, which means people who don't keep any mitzvahs, for real, but if they go to shul, when they go to shul, read, the 1 to 2 times a year that they go to shul, they'll go to an Orthodox shul, no? You can define American Jewry by looking at those non-observant Orthodox, and the dwindling population of non-observant Orthodox means that they are going into complete assimilation. Right? It's a good thing. South African Jewry. Anyone here from South Africa? You're from South Africa? Well, South African Jewry is interesting in that there's a very small Reform and Conservative movement in South Africa. Those people who go to shul even once or twice a year all go to Orthodox shuls, large shuls, big cantors. No? That's South African Jewry for you. I think there was a woman, Dina Evans, who wrote some articles in Tradition about South African Jewry a couple of years ago. Non-observant Orthodox is like a thing. What we see from Reb Shlomo Zalman's tshuva is that do what you can to be mekarif the people, providing it's real kiruv. Right? To invite them for a Shabbos meal, that's okay. Reb Moshe, I think, would assume, again, I don't think, Reb Moshe would say it's mamish osir. The classical poskim, the shach, etc., they take a more nuanced position, but the general approaches to this question are found in Reb Moshe and Shlomo Zalman. So Rabbi Bechafer suggests, I began with this, and then I lost my train of thought. Rabbi Bechafer suggests that maybe there's no machlokas between Reb Moshe and Reb Shlomo Zalman. That Reb Moshe's writing to Arya Kaplan in the 50s, that's before the Kiruv movement really took off. After the Kiruv movement took off, then everybody would say it's mutter. I don't know. It seems to me that if you read the sources, l'cha'ora, sometimes you can't reconcile things. If you read the sources, Reb Moshe is saying it's an iser of mesis. It's an iser of mesis to invite somebody. That's like very severe. Okay. So I don't think you can reconcile it. My understanding is that most poskim do follow Reb Shlomo Zalman and Reb Moshe Shternbuch, and certainly this Yesh Amil Asmach. If there's any questions, we can take some questions. If not, we could just tell jokes. Now I'm stuck. I have to tell jokes. That's bad. Huh? Yeah.
So, I say, if you're having, like, a Friday night dinner that's supposed to be for group, but you know that there are, like, teenagers who are coming, like,
they're not going to teach Shabbos and they're going to secular college, and like they're not planning on growing religiously. Is that a problem?
So that's the question. I think we make a mistake when we view Kiruv as an all or nothing proposition. If someone doesn't become frum, that doesn't mean that it was unsuccessful Kiruv. And to go back to the way we started, I don't know if Noach was completely unsuccessful. Certainly if people end up not intermarrying, maybe that's successful in Kiruv. You know, any opportunity to, if someone is genuinely interested in Yiddishkeit and they're asking a lot of questions, any opportunity to connect them to Yiddishkeit is a good thing. So I don't think we should view it from the perspective of whether they end up becoming frum necessarily. I know I'm backtracking what I said originally, but I think that's correct. The question is like this: what about the Shabbat project? Is that mutter? Should I turn off the tape? It's not so pashut, no? It's not so pashut. Because it seems to me that this heter of kiruv that Rav Shlomo Zalman, etc. are talking about is only when the person is expressing genuine interest. To have like this big Shabbos, what do they call it, Shabbat across America, Shabbat Pride. It's like in England, the chief rabbi started this. No, the chief rabbi of South Africa. I apologize to all South Africans. But it's not so simple that it should be mutter. On the other hand, you could say that the only people who sign up have some sort of interest. And if we give them an opportunity to sleep over, that does make it better, al pi halacha, because then we have the shach, etc., to rely on. So maybe that is enough grounds to be makel. But if you live in a small apartment and the opportunity to sleep over is, yeah, sure, you could sleep over, bring a sleeping bag and stay on my floor, it's a little more difficult. I think we have to be somewhat realistic. That's my general approach. But thank you for listening, Chefer, and have a good night.
Very short. Thank you so much. I have a